You know, so I interviewed a lot of them, not the real minor ones, but definitely some other ones that I knew weren't going to win or anything. And then we had three running in the general and talked to all of them multiple times and a lot of those kind of... Oh, yeah, my gosh, the World Athletic Games, that was a bucket list.
It sounded unbelievable.
Yeah, it was essentially, you know, in talking to somebody later, it was essentially like working as a volunteer at the Olympics. In fact, a lot of the paid staff who do other things in life, but there was a guy that I was one of my supervisors as a college professor in Canada, but he's worked multiple Olympics doing logistics and stuff. And I got a good...
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hard to believe I'm saying this, but it's our final Inside Douglas County program for 2022. And as we're looking at the end of the year in a lot of different ways, as folks are with some of our national programs in particular over the next few days, we thought it an appropriate time to take a year-end look at the U.S. economy and even beyond and look around the world as well. Noted national economist Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, longtime friend of the program, on with us. And Dr. Eisenberg, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Absolutely delighted.
So I guess, first of all, just to gloat a bit, remind us where you live and what the current temperature and weather conditions are.
It's beautifully sunny. It's 82 degrees, and the boats are all over the ocean and the intercoastal waterway. There's a bit of a breeze, and the palm trees are moving back and forth. I'm in Miami.
Okay.
This is where I live.
You probably don't regret getting out of the Beltway for this.
No, I moved 3 years ago, almost to the day, literally to the day. I think I moved, tomorrow was the day I moved into my house 3 years ago. And I've never looked back. I recommend everybody move south. Move to Arizona, somewhere lovely, warm, happy.
Very good. Well, we're here in Oregon where it's wet and all of that, but we'll just move along and think good thoughts for you in Florida. First of all, give us an overall kind of broad brush stroke look at the U.S. economy as we end the year. What do you think?
The U.S. economy is remarkably strong. It's surprisingly strong in the face of all these rate hikes, and we haven't felt the increases from all the rate hikes yet because it takes a while for them to seep through the economy, housing accepted. But the economy is still strong. Consumer spending is good. GDP growth in Q3 was very good. Q4 will be decent. But 23 will slow down. There's no question about it. So I think we're pleasantly surprised at how strong it's been. And that's great news. I mean, unemployment's 3.7. It's so strong, the Fed may have to raise rates more, but that's a whole separate conversation. But 22 turned out to be economically much better than we thought. Much more inflation than we thought on one hand, but much better growth the second half of the year than we ever dreamt.
What about a year-end look at the stock market? Every time this year I've looked at an account statement, I've really needed a glass of wine.
Yeah, don't look. I think that's the recommendation. I'm a PhD economist, and my recommendation is never look. Just continue doing what you're doing. You know, put your $500 away every month, or $1,000, or $100 a week, or $50, whatever it is. Keep doing it and don't look. So the stock market's down roughly 20%. The Dow Jones down 10%, the S&P 20%, and the NASDAQ about 30%. It's been a tough year. And what's more remarkable there is if you go back and look at the prognostications people made, not me, but the financial people, they got earnings per share about right. They really did. So you figure if you know earnings per share, you should know how the stock market performs. And that's totally not true because everybody got inflation interest rates wrong. And the fact that rates rose rapidly and, more importantly, unexpectedly drove the stock market down, even though earnings were good. The question now is, what will earnings look like in 23? They won't be.
And I think we lost him for a second. Let's see if that signal comes back in. Do you have a there we go. Okay, you're back.
We're back. I'm back. Yeah, so the prognosticators got earnings per share correct, right on the yet they missed completely the boat on inflation and interest rates. And therefore, even though they knew the earnings per share, the stock market declined and none of them predicted it last year. None of them.
Interesting. What about the impact of inflation on all of this? Every time I leave any store, I look at the, you know, I make pretty typical purchases, pretty simple, not a lot of fancy things or whatever going on. But you walk out of the store and go, okay, this didn't used to cost this much last year.
Right. That's everyone feels that. But there's some interesting things going on. At the upper end and the very lowest end, the inflation hasn't been quite as bad as it's been for the middle class. The middle class really got hit hard because the middle class consumes more cars and gasoline. Poor people take the bus so that they didn't get the gas hit. And so it's middle class has really been hit hardest, and their incomes have fallen. By contrast, at the lowest levels, the lower 20-30% of the income spectrum, their incomes have risen. On top of that, people got stimulus checks and unemployment insurance, and we saved money because we had nowhere to go and nowhere to travel. So even though the inflation's bad, consumer spending has held up. And I keep thinking it's going to stop because we're going to run down the savings that we built up during COVID and post-COVID. And that may take another year, 8 months, 12 months, something like that. But at some point, the high rates and the reduced savings and firms fearful of a recession will generate a recession. So I expect to have one sometime this year, mid this year, I guess. But no guarantees. And maybe not. But if we don't have one, don't think of this as binary. Don't think, oh, it's going to be great if we have no recession and horrible if we will. No, it'll be a mild recession, so it won't be good, but it'll be awful. And if we don't have a recession, we'll still have rising unemployment, but we'll have very meager GDP growth. So it's not a lights on, lights off type of thing. It's a dimmer switch here. It's a little more dim if there's a recession. Think of it that way.
A lot of times we are in a recession for months before they say, oh, by the way, you've been in a recession for several months. Do you think we're already in one now?
I do not in the slightest. And people disagree about this. And people think the first half of the year when GDP growth was negative in Q1 and in Q2, both two straight quarters of negative GDP growth, we weren't. Because labor markets were super strong, wage growth was strong. Those are pretty good measures. The U.S. defines the National Bureau of Economic Research. They have a group of five or six economists who sit there and figure it out after the fact that we had a recession. They look at the depth, the breadth, and the duration of the problem, right? So COVID was just brief. It was 6 weeks of disaster, and then it was over. But that was so deep and so broad, even though it was short term, it was a recession. You don't look just at GDP. That's not a great measure. You've got to have more than that going on because GDP can go down for weird reasons. And that's what happened in Q1 and Q2. It was government spending that went down. It was exports that collapsed. Imports skyrocketed. Because we couldn't get the ships out of California, off the ports of California. So it was weird factors that drove it. It wasn't that bad. In Q3, GDP was great. It wasn't that good either. Similar situation. Things went in reverse. They were really powerful. It was wonderful. But overall, the year, you know, we had muddling growth, maybe 0.5%, 1%. Next year, it'll be less. It will be. We'll have 0.5%, 0, because we're probably going to have a mild recession.
Are there particular sectors of the market this past year that were especially performing well in the midst of all this? And what about ones that were especially performing not good?
Yeah, the not good, easy to talk about in Rose, where you are, right? It was housing. Housing is the first sector to go into the can when interest rates go up, because it's super interest sensitive. People buy houses all the time. You're selling 6 million houses a year, 5 million houses resales, and another million or so new. It's a huge sector of the economy, 3-4%, and it quickly went down. As rates went up in Jan, Feb, March, April, May, June, interest rates went up and the housing market weakened, and rates peaked at 7% for a month or so in October. Now they're down a bit. So housing gets hit hard. automobiles usually get hit hard, but not this time for the same reason. They're, think of a car as a tenth of a house. Price, a tenth as much, and volume, 10 times as much. And they get hit, but because of semiconductor problems, autos haven't been hurt. And now we're seeing manufacturing get hit. Because people can say, look, I'm not going to buy a TV set. I'm not going to buy an air conditioner. I'm not going to buy some exercise equipment. I'm not going to buy a motor home or something. And they pull back. And now manufacturing is about to enter recession. Soon commercial construction will hit recession. So one by one, these sectors fall into the economy and do poorly. On the flip side, energy was the winner. By far, it was by far the best performing sector, not because energy does well when the economy is weak, but more because of the war in Russia and so on. The price of energy went way up during the course of 2022. Now it's come back down a bit, but the stock market has treated, Shell, Exxon, Chevron, and so on, Total, Elf, all these firms, they've had great returns. If I could do it again, I'd be fully invested in fossil fuels in 22.
And how rare is that for someone to say?
Yeah, it's pretty rare. I mean, last time was 10 or 12 years ago, and the oil companies had such a great run. And in the long run, they're not going to. Policy is now working against them. There's no question. Washington, the administration, green, electric vehicles and so on. But in the immediate short run, they had a great run. Whether this is the last run they have, we could argue that may be the case. Maybe you don't want to dive into it as a result, but they were the winners in 22, far and away.
What about real estate? You mentioned that a bit a moment ago. A lot of people are asking, does it, in the 2023, does it have the potential to be 08 all over again?
It doesn't. No. House prices are nationally, they're flat to coming down month over month. They're still up anywhere between 3 and 10% year over year, depending on the index you look at. But this is not a replay. No. Homeowners have a ton of equity. I mean, home prices now are back where they were in March of 22. And if they fall 10%, they'll be back where they were in, March, November of 2020 or 2021. I'm sorry. So, no. Most homeowners have lots of home equity. As long as people keep their jobs, they're not going to lose their homes because no one got a loan who couldn't qualify for it legitimately. People had to put down 10% down payments on their house. There are no 110% mortgages out there. The supply of homes is very limited because people like you, I'm joking, maybe you didn't, I don't know, but probably you did, refinanced your house and have a very low interest rate. You're not going to put your house on the market. So for all these reasons, prices are holding up pretty well year over year, despite the fact that there's not much interest because there's no inventory. So if inventory were much higher, we'd have a much more problematic situation, but that's not going to come to pass because everybody has these low mortgages. And so it could be a weak market, not much activity. Prices fall a little bit, year over year, they fall 3-5%. Sure, it's possible, but no, not even. And Dodd-Frank, no, not even close.
Well, and by the way, no refinancing. I'm old enough that we actually got the house paid off a couple of years ago. So that part
Congratulations.
Yeah, that part feels really good. Let's talk about Russia, Ukraine. How is it impacting the world economy and the U.S. economy?
So when the war broke out, no one knew how long it would last, how bad it would be. But what happened, energy prices skyrocketed. Cereal prices went way up because both Russia and Ukraine are large exporters of wheat and grain and so on, sunflower oil, seeds and stuff. But over time, slowly and steadily, the world has regained its footing. Energy prices aren't doing much because of China's weak policy decisions there. And Europe's figured out ways to prevent people freezing to death in winter now and so on. But it certainly hasn't been a bonus, let's put it that way. It caused the Fed a lot of inconvenience. It raised inflation rates much higher than they would otherwise have been earlier in the year when the Fed raised rates quickly. So it was a harmful factor, but now receding, I would say, is the best way to describe it, at least for the U.S.
Now, a lot of the pandemic assistance, some of it has ended, some of it is right on the cusp of ending. Does this play into anything we're dealing with?
It does. The students still don't have to repay their student loans now. They couldn't get the forgiveness. It's going to the Supreme Court. They'll make a decision in June. But until that decision or 2 months afterwards, whatever the policy is, people don't have to repay their student loans. That's certainly helpful in the short run, right? Other than that, it's been, I mean, the child tax credits went away end of last year. The unemployment insurance benefits, they wore out. So we're largely beyond the COVID benefits now. With the exception of student loans, there's not much left. State and local governments still have money to spend, and there's infrastructure money to spend. So Washington's still somewhat stimulative on other factors. But the COVID money's largely gone. There's some health care money that's still around, I think, through the end of this year, but it ends, I guess, tomorrow.
What about your assessment of this omnibus spending bill and its impact on the deficit and how that may impact other things in the next year or two?
Great question. So the omnibus budget bill increased discretionary spending from $1.5 trillion to about $1.65 trillion, so a bump up of 10%. After inflation, a bump up of 3%. That's not a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but it's the wrong direction. Congress should have tried to cut spending a little bit. Our economy's overheated, unemployment's too low, the Fed's raising rates. The last thing you want to do is stimulate the economy with loose fiscal policy. Had they just kept it at 1.5 or 1.6 after inflation, it would have been okay, but to increase it was, I think, a policy mistake. Both parties wanted it for different reasons. The Democrats wanted it for health care spending and health and human services stuff. Republicans generally wanted it for defense. They both got what they wanted, but the other one got what they wanted, and that's why it went up. But this was a mistake. It'll make the policy harder, at the margin, harder for the Fed. They may have to raise rates a little bit higher as a result. It's unfortunate.
Are you concerned about the long-term implications of the federal budget debt level and its rapid increase under both parties in recent years?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's roughly 100% of GDP, the public debt, the debt that we pay interest on and have bonds outstanding for. We can tolerate this. The problem is, as you say, it went up a lot in COVID. It also went up a lot in the housing bust of 07, 08, 08, 09, whatever it was. And we need to sort of, as long as rates are low, but now rates are a little higher, they'll come back down again, which is good. But there's always the next recession that's out there. Then we might have to spend a lot of money there. And we don't seem to recover and get a handle on this. So I'm a little concerned, yes. I'd like to see rates come down. If rates come down, the problem goes away. I mean, up until this increasing cycle in March, interest payments as recently as 2021 were record low interest, even though our debt was in record high because rates were so low. Rates will come down in the long run, but how much they come down is a question. And it certainly will take money away from other things, other policies Congress wants to spend money on. So it's not a great thing. I'm not terrified, but I'm a little concerned.
As you look around the world, what about other nations and their economic status? Are there some especially concerning areas or maybe even some ones that are doing pretty well?
Yeah, no one's really doing well right now. I think we're probably doing better than almost everybody. Europe's either in recession or on the verge of it. I know England's in recession. Germany's in recession. Other countries are either in it or on the verge of entering it because of big inflation reducing living standards and high energy costs, really a double whammy for them. So that's one sector that's not helpful. And the other major sector is China. It's Europe, the U.S., and China. They're the ones that really matter. And China's, you know, how do you say it? They were very good at repressing their economy, society, during the worst of COVID for 3 years, you know, COVID zero policy. But they obviously are incompetent at governing because they just opened the floodgates up. They had 3 years to get themselves ready for this day, and they did nothing. And now we're going to pay the price to some extent. I expect it wouldn't be surprising if a new variant comes out of China. It's such a big country. The number of deaths and number of caseloads, they're not telling us anything. They told us nothing 3 years ago when it started. They're telling us nothing now. They're like a big black worthless box of healthcare information. But we know probably 5,000 people a day are dying, but they won't tell us that. So we don't know what's going on. This is not a good. when we had COVID waves, the first COVID waves, people didn't go out. People didn't know what to do. It won't be quite as bad for them because they've had some injections, but it's not going to be a good story, at least for 6 or 9 months. The first thing have to occur before you can get beyond it right now. So they're going to have growth. Europe's going to be in a mild recession sometime next year. So global growth isn't going to be, this is not going to be gangbuster growth here. Not going to happen.
How is the rest of the world looking at the U.S.? Are they concerned? Are they envious? How are we in the world picture right now?
We're pretty good. The dollar's pretty strong. Our monetary policy is more restrictive than other ones. That's helped the dollar go up. Last couple months, it's come down a bit. But still, 2022 will have been a very good year for the dollar. So we're importing more stuff. Our dollar's strong. Our growth has been better than we expected. And, you know, COVID's now, like it is in most cases, largely behind us. I think our policies, and this is a personal opinion more than a professional one, but I think our policies when it comes to Ukraine have been appropriate. Both Democrats and Republicans have been generally very strong supporters of helping the Ukraine or helping Ukraine fight off the Russians. Well, it's been a pretty good year. We passed the infrastructure bill last year. We passed a couple of pieces of legislation this year. So Congress actually did some positive work for us. They were doing their job. Could have done more, but they worked pretty well. So this is a pretty good year.
Employment data, good or bad right now?
Spectacularly good. Unbelievably good. No one's firing workers. Unemployment's at 3.7. The lowest all time since the Vietnam War in 69 was 3.5. We had that a few months ago and just before COVID. So we're right at this 52-year all-time low in unemployment.
Wow.
There aren't enough people. There aren't enough people to work. That's part of the problem. But it's unbelievable. And firms aren't letting go of workers because they're hard to get.
Well, and what do we do and how? What's the impact of the economy from this shortage of workers right now?
Great question. So there's wage inflation going on because workers are in short supply. Interestingly enough, especially at the low ends, you know, restaurants, hotels, all these workers, these firms need workers, and the pay is going up. The labor pool of high school grads and high school dropouts is 4% smaller or 5% smaller than it was pre-COVID. For college grads, it's 5% higher. So there's no real shortage of college kids and beyond, but there's a shortage at the low end. So wages for them are going up rapidly, and the gap between the wages between college grads and non-college grads is shrinking as a result. This is a really interesting outcome. But there's wage inflation going on, not enough workers, and this is causing overall inflation. And that's why the Fed's raising rates in part. We're seeing goods inflation go down. We're seeing energy inflation weaken. So a lot of inflationary pressures, transportation costs have come way down. But wages are the big problem because unemployment's so low.
Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, how do people connect with you?
You can text me at 22, text the word bowtie to 22828. 22828, bowtie, one word. And you'll be able to sign up for my daily 70 words of economics, 5 days a week.
All right, Dr. Elliot.
22828, the word bowtie.
Perfect. Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, thanks for being on.
It was a pleasure.
1258.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.